In September 2007, a 1-pound African gray parrot died unexpectedly, and the world mourned. The New York Times eulogized him. Nature published tributes. Major networks covered his passing. Thousands of strangers sent condolences. Why such grief for a bird? Because Alex had spent 30 years shattering everything science believed about animal minds. He could count, understand zero, create new words, and grasp abstract concepts like same and different, feats supposedly impossible for a creature whose brain was the size of a walnut. His work with scientist Irene Pepperberg didn't just advance our understanding of parrots, it forced us to reconsider the nature of intelligence itself and where humans truly stand in the hierarchy of consciousness. Irene's path to Alex began with childhood loneliness in 1950s Brooklyn. At 4, her father brought home a trembling green parakeet. When it stepped onto her finger and made eye contact, something shifted. Here was a being that saw her, responded to her, wanted to be near her. The parakeet perched on her shoulder during TV shows, filling a void her emotionally distant parents couldn't. Birds kept appearing at pivotal moments. During high school chemistry, a distressed yellow parakeet flew through the lab window. While classmates panicked, Irene calmly orchestrated a rescue, turning off flames, setting out water, gently catching the bird when it landed to drink. At MIT and Harvard, Irene excelled in theoretical chemistry despite rampant sexism, but her passion was fading. Then, in 1973, after her home burned down, she watched a PBS series on animal communication. Everything clicked. This was her future, understanding animal minds, not molecules. The decision was radical. She had no training in animal behavior, and science treated animals as mindless automatons. But Irene had grown up connecting with birds. She knew intuitively that something more was happening behind those bright eyes. In June 1977, Irene selected a 1-year-old African gray parrot from a Chicago pet store. Their start was rocky. Alex was traumatized from capture, and when he tried flying with clipped wings, he crashed and broke a feather, spraying blood everywhere. Gradually, trust built through shared activities like shredding paper cards. Irene's revolutionary training method rejected standard behaviorist practice. Instead of isolation and food deprivation, she created a rich social context where she and a volunteer took turns asking each other about objects while Alex watched. He wasn't just observing, he was a rival, eager to compete for attention and rewards. Within weeks, Alex produced approximations, air for paper, E for key. Then came the breakthrough. He identified a red key as key, though trained only on silver ones. He'd transferred knowledge, applying a label to a novel example. This wasn't mimicry, this was understanding. Alex also learned no and wielded it strategically, refusing handling, rejecting tasks, and tossing away partially chewed corks while demanding cork until given pristine replacements. His obstinacy revealed something profound. He was using language functionally to express preferences and manipulate his environment. Establishing scientific credibility proved brutal. In 1979, both science and nature rejected Irene's first paper without review, claiming insufficient interest. That same year, a conference accused animal language researchers of fraud or self-deception, comparing their work to Clever Hands, a horse who appeared to do arithmetic but actually read handlers' subtle cues. Irene prudently renamed her project from Avian Language Experiment to Avian Learning Experiment and called Alex's vocalizations labels rather than words. The academic establishment couldn't accept that a bird, a creature with a fundamentally different brain, could demonstrate sophisticated cognition. For over 7 years at Purdue, Irene and Alex lived as academic nomads, moving between temporary labs while enduring floods, cockroach infestations, and constant uncertainty. Alex's abilities expanded. He began understanding categories and distinguishing between questions about color versus shape. His mischievousness emerged too, chewing grant proposals and knocking over coffee cups, then diffusing tension by saying, "I'm sorry," with increasing pathos. At Northwestern in 1984, Alex demonstrated stunning linguistic creativity. After months of refusing to say apple, he suddenly declared, "Bannery, I want bannery," eating the fruit happily. When corrected, he repeated bannery with patient confidence. A linguist later suggested Alex had created a lexical elision, combining banana and cherry to describe something that tasted like one but looked like the other. He wasn't just learning labels, he was manipulating language creatively. The breakthrough came when Irene tested Alex on same and different, concepts requiring abstract thinking. Shown two objects, like a green square and blue square, Alex had to respond color to what's different and shape to what's same. He wasn't just identifying attributes, but understanding relationships between objects. He succeeded 75% of the time with familiar objects and 85% with novel items. At the 1986 International Primatological Congress, a senior professor was stunned. Irene's parrot performed more sophisticatedly than Premack's famous chimpanzees. If a bird with a walnut-sized brain could grasp abstract concepts, intelligence wasn't about brain size or mammalian architecture. Alex's mathematical abilities proved even more remarkable. In 2003, shown three objects and asked how many, he answered five, then added none, correctly indicating no set of five existed. He'd transferred none to indicate zero without being taught. Zero is highly abstract, a concept that only entered Western culture in the 1600s. He interrupted another bird's training by correctly summing sequences of clicks, achieving 85% accuracy, adding hidden sets of nuts. He understood numerical equivalence, consistently choosing an Arabic numeral 5 over 3 blocks, grasping that symbols represented quantities. As primatologist Mike Tomasello often joked, "Except for that damn bird." In early September 2007, Irene finally secured major grants, including a Harvard partnership. After years of financial struggle, she'd have a real salary and benefits. On Thursday, September 5th, Alex was chatty and affectionate. At day's end, they exchanged their usual parting. "You be good, I love you," said Alex. "I love you too," Irene replied. "You'll be in tomorrow?" "Yes, I'll be in tomorrow." The next morning, Alex was found dead in his cage. No warning, no goodbye beyond those final words. Alex's death shocked the scientific world, but his legacy was secure. He'd proven animal minds are far more like human minds than behavioral science believed possible. Each time defenders of human uniqueness set a new bar, language, tool use, abstract thinking, mathematical reasoning, Alex cleared it with his walnut-sized brain. He forced us to confront an uncomfortable truth. We aren't separate from or superior to other beings. We're part of nature, not apart from it. The illusion of human exceptionalism enabled us to exploit nature without regard, consequences we now face in climate change and mass extinction. Alex's work suggests another path, recognizing that consciousness and intelligence exist across species in ways we're only beginning to understand. Irene never claimed to prove Alex was conscious, but his behavior suggested it powerfully. When he spelled n-a-ta in exasperation or manipulated situations to answer none, he exceeded anything he'd been taught. He showed creativity, humor, frustration, affection, and clear intentionality. Through Alex's death, Irene learned the true depth of their bond. Though she'd always loved him, she'd maintained scientific distance. Only through searing grief did she realize how profoundly they'd connected. Alex left us like a magician exiting the stage, a blinding flash, and he was gone. His greatest gift wasn't just expanding our understanding of animal cognition, it was humbling us. He reminded us that intelligence takes many forms, that a 1-pound ball of gray feathers could revolutionize how we see ourselves. In recognizing Alex's mind, we're called to recognize all the minds around us and to treat the natural world not as a resource to exploit, but as a community of conscious beings to which we belong.